Welcome to the Possibility Project, an open conversation series where changemakers talk about the big questions we need to answer now. Your hosts are Devin Davey and Heather Hiscox, together with technical help from the nonprofit Snapcast. This series empowers the listener to shift systems, rebuild structures, and foster equity in the social impact sector.
So here's a super quick overview of what we're going to do today. Welcome to Possibility Project. This is a disruptive conversation series where changemakers talk about the big questions we need to answer now. I'm Devin Davey, and my co-creator Heather Hiscox and I started this project when COVID hit the US with the dream of reimagining the social sector. Heather today helps nonprofits, foundations, and local government change the way they change the world. And I'm a strategy consultant, and I help social entrepreneurs, founders, and CEOs get unstuck by co-designing and implementing people and process solutions. So this is the community. A lot of y'all are represented here and on the call. So we're so happy to see so many new faces and also familiar faces. And the goal of our work and our time together is to really unite, stimulate, and explore. So really, really seeing what's possible, what we can do in an inspirational and action-oriented way. So we're gonna get right into it, what we're doing today. And we have two badass women leading us in conversation about what's going on in the design space, what's not working, and how we can make it better. So first we're gonna do a lightning talk, and we're gonna talk about dysfunctions in design. Then our speakers will talk about what practices and policies are emerging that gives them hope. And then we'll have a Q&A, and we'll open it up to y'all to ask our two lovely ladies questions. And we want you to engage with each other around this topic. And so we're gonna use breakout rooms. And finally, we're gonna come back together with everyone to debrief. And then lastly, we'll announce our next episode topic and our speakers. Now on to our guests. I am so, so honored and pleased to be joined by these incredible ladies, and we'll briefly share a tidbit about their bio, and I encourage you to read their full bios in the chat or in our LinkedIn group. So Dr. Leslie Ann Noel is calling in from New Orleans, and a fun fact is that Leslie was a backup singer in a reggae band. Leslie, will you tell us a little bit more about that?
So it's really, really random. I did undergrad studies in Brazil, and I lived in this tiny town in South Brazil, and I was minding my own business, walking down the streets, where somebody looked at me and said, "Oh my God, you look like you should be in a reggae band. We want you in our band." And I mean, you know, at the end of the day, it's like, it's complete profiling. They just looked at me and said, "You know what, we need a black person with locks in our band." But I joined. I went to their show, because they gave me tickets to the show that they were having that night. I went to their show. I decided I liked them and I liked their vibe. And I was a backup singer in the band for about 6 months. And then actually they fired all of the backup singers because the backup singers were getting too much attention. And the singers didn't want to compete with the backup singers and didn't want to share any money with us. And so it was 6 months and I had a lot of fun, and then I got fired.
I love that. Thank you. Also, Leslie is a Trinidadian designer, educator, and as I mentioned, she's based in New Orleans. We are so thrilled to have Tamika Montgomery. Tamika is calling in from the DC metro area, and a little piece of humanity and fun fact about Tamika is that she did Peace Corps in West Africa and ended up playing the role of a doctor where she stitched up her dog's face. And there's a book that's called Where There Is No Doctor that she actually had to play the part in, and that was given to Peace Corps volunteers. And so then the dog ended up coming back to the U.S. with her and living for 14 years. Tamika, will you share a little bit more?
Yeah. So my dog, it wasn't his face. It was another part of his body.
Okay.
So leave that to your imagination. And it was like a little, like I said, the vet came and did his job, but he didn't finish the job. So my dog was bleeding profusely and I had to save his life. And Peace Corps gave back many, many years ago, would give us this, they gave the volunteers this book called Where There Is No Doctor. So as my dog was in his last, breathing his last air, you know, he was dying. Only thing I had left to do was to open up the book and try to figure out how to perform stitches. So it told me how to boil a needle and some thread. And I did, and I stitched my dog up in his hinder parts. And yeah, and then the next day he was back to his old normal self. And like you said, 14 years later, we were back in America. He was in Colorado, New York, DC, and back to Colorado and lived a nice long life.
Love that. Thank you so, so much. Tamika is the founder of Core Strategy Partners and is with us, like I said, from the DC area. So now that you all get a little bit of sense of the humanity of these ladies and the funniness, we're going to jump right into the first question. And this is going to be a lightning talk where I'm going to have Tamika start us off. And so here's the prompt of, related to equity and design, what dysfunctions do you want to see disappear with COVID? Tamika, take us away.
Yeah, okay, so I'm gonna I'm gonna make it a little bit different. So it says you want to see disappear with the virus, but you know, I was thinking more broadly just in terms of how we design programs in the social sector. So the dysfunctions that I want to speak to, the dysfunctions that I experienced serving in an administration on the federal level, designing programs and policies on a very national level. There were some things that I found extremely frustrating. And you know, the one thing before I jump into that, I just want to say, you know, I'm not a designer in like the way that Dr. Leslie Ann is, in terms of, you know, going to school and studying it. But, you know, I do feel like those of us who have been put in roles where we are designing programs and designing policies, that we are in fact designers. And so it's just whether or not we understand or are exposed to some of the design thinking tools that that really kind of, I think, are important. And that's what has attracted me to this. So with respect to the dysfunctions that I saw and experienced, one is it's frenetic, right? And so oftentimes in the social sector, there's a crisis there and we operate in a very reactive way. And so what happens is, and what I even experienced, is I felt like that sense of frenzy in your response really hinders creativity and creative thinking. And what ends up happening is that you tend to have a very insular approach to how you come up with solutions. So that was something that that I found extremely frustrating, because I think the challenges that we deal with from a social sector perspective really warrants a broader way of thinking and a more innovative way of thinking. But then the other thing of it is that I think of, because of bureaucracies and just the overall structure, it creates a fear of kind of creative risk, right? And so what I found was that there was more of a comfort with staying within the existing dysfunction because you know it, right? You know it. And so even when new ideas and new approaches are presented, they can be shot down because it's just that fear of the risk, because you're operating in a space that impacts so many people in a profound way, many people who are disenfranchised. And so you don't want to make mistakes, right? Which then the other piece of it that I felt like I experienced quite a bit is that this piece of really gathering insights of the stakeholders, of the people who you're ultimately designing for. And I felt like from my experience, that was due to a lot of bureaucracy that really prevented one from going to those groups and really gathering their insights and their experiences and really trying to step into their shoes and understand their experiences to come up with the right solutions. And so what happens is we skip that step and we just go straight to the solutions, right? Because everybody has already these preconceived solutions, even legislators, because they've been talking with some people, but they have ideas. And so So yeah, so that, and then I think the last thing, so that was frenetic situation, fear of kind of being creative, skipping the step of gathering stakeholder insights. And then the last thing that I experienced and I believe has a serious impact is that the organizations in which, you know, all of this exists are organizations made of people, right? Not just this organism that is void of actual humans. And so I think we have to think about that as we look to design programs in the social sector, to remember that we are designing for humans and humans operating in real human systems. And I think that sometimes that get, well, from my experience, I felt like it got lost at times. So thank those you. Are the dysfunctions. Yeah.
It's awesome. Leslie, same question. What dysfunctions have you experienced?
So like Tamika, I might be going on a slightly different tangent, you know, like if you give me a little bit of space, if you give me a soapbox, I'll get up on it and start talk about all of the dysfunctions in the world. So the dysfunctions that I was thinking of that I would like to see disappear, after COVID, I see them in design and I think they're just dysfunctions in general. So like the first one I was thinking of is, you know, lack of access, because and lack of access to so many things, which we have really seen like in this pandemic, lack of access to education, quality education, good health, land and property. I mean, maybe that's not so COVID related, but we are seeing that, okay, if you have space, you can get through this pandemic better. And, you know, so that's like another inequality that has just been very evident in the pandemic. And it's something then that we have to think about in design, you know, and how are we supporting or hindering people's access to everything, you know, land, health, safety, opportunities, benefits, things like that. I'm going to cheat here because I'm saying three dysfunctions and each dysfunction I'm putting like 100 points into it. But the second dysfunction, I think, is who has the right to create knowledge? You know, I think that that's something that I would like to see go away after COVID. So one thing that I saw that was really great during the pandemic is that, I'm an academic. I go to academic conferences and things like that. And the good thing is that because of COVID, all of the conferences went online. And so suddenly now a lot of people had access who might not have had access before. And then we also were able to see different groups of people now being validated for creating knowledge in a way that maybe they had not been before. So, you know, I think that that is an issue. This is one that really affects us as design, because, you know, we might see the community people, the community organizations that we're working with, we might view them and say, well, okay, maybe we're the experts and what do these people know? But I think that that issue around who has the right to create knowledge, I'm hoping that post-pandemic, we're going to see that, okay, everybody has the right to create knowledge and everyone has the right to share this knowledge and has a right to contribute. Well, I'm saying that and then I'm thinking, but maybe not everybody, but I won't go into that. And then the third dysfunction that I'm going to use, and I'm going to use very academic language for this because I just like this term, it's about the matrix of domination or the matrix of oppression, where we are looking at race, class, gender, you know, all of these issues that we need to address somehow. So again, in the work that we're doing in design, are we helping dismantle, and this I'm pulling out of other people's literature, it's not me talking about, this isn't my term, you know, but are we dismantling the matrix of domination or the matrix of oppression, either in the work that we're doing, in the way we're doing the work, are we repeating this domination and oppression, or are we dismantling it in the solutions that we're producing, you know, are we really doing our part against oppression? And yes, I came all social justice focused today.
That's fantastic. Tamika, I'm curious if you have further thoughts on this or responses to Leslie.
Yeah, I was going to say, you know, Leslie, your last point, it makes me think of, and I don't know, Devon, if I jump ahead, but what it makes me think about is with respect to systems change, right? At the end of the day, you know, we can design a whole bunch of programs and policies or initiatives and things like that, but at the end of the day, we really need to change systems because we all know that systems work the way that they were designed to work. And I believe that the objective of all of this ought to really be to change the system so that it produces the outcomes and the impact that we really want it to produce. Otherwise, everything is just disjointed. And you know, my hope, I think what we're seeing now with this whole COVID is around dismantling systems, right? But at the same time, in doing that, it's hard work and it's long work. And so we just have to be committed to that type of work as well, right? The work that goes into changing the systems. Yeah, that's it.
Awesome. Thank you both. We're going to pivot and we're going to talk about the flip side of what's going on in design. And I'm curious, what's emerging in the design space specifically? What gives you both hope about equitable design that is really serving the people who need it most? So Leslie, I'm gonna ask you to go first.
So what gives me hope is that I'll go into like a conversation about design and I am no longer the only person in the room talking about equity. You know, And maybe I never was the only person talking about equity, but it's just that we were all having these conversations in a lot of different places. And I think that certainly during the pandemic, I've made like hundreds of new contacts and, you know, we've been able to have more of these conversations together and we're more aware of what other people who are interested in equity and social justice, you know, we're much more aware of what they're doing. So I have a lot of hope that when I go into design conversation now, there are a lot of people who are talking about equity. There are a lot of people who are saying, okay, we need to figure out how we're dealing with multiple perspectives. How are we getting more pluralism, more plural voices, and so that I think gives me hope. I'm also drawing a lot of hope from really alternative movements and organizing and, you know, to see how people are organizing the protests after George Floyd's murder. The organizing gives me hope, you know, that we're not just saying, okay, it happened. But, you know, the way people are organizing, that is something to give you hope. The fact that people who are so young and so committed to this, I think that is another hopeful. And then the last area that is really, really, really giving me hope is this interest in futurism and speculation and Afrofuturism. And I mean, Beyoncé's Black is King is something that you could watch 100 times and say, oh my goodness, there is this beautiful world. I'm a Black woman, so I'll say this beautiful Black woman and this beautiful Black future that I can dream about. So definitely Afrofuturism, visionary writing, people like Adrienne Marie Brown. There's something you all have to look up called the Wakanda Dream Lab, which was an experiment about life in Wakanda. And to me, I've been trying to frame a lot of my design work around hope. You know, so we're not just asking people about problems, we're asking about dreams and futures and hope, so that we're trying to take people to a really different place.
Awesome. And I'm so curious, Leslie, for you to come back to talk to us about pluralism as the new diversity in a lot of ways. So we got to make sure to touch on that. Tamika, same point. What's giving you hope?
So something that you said, Leslie, really gives me hope, and that's kind of watching the organizing of young folks and Black and Brown people who feel, I believe, are more empowered and emboldened. You know, it makes me think about, you know, Auntie Maxine Waters, where she said, "No, I'm reclaiming my time," you know, reclaiming my time. And that's what I feel like, that sort of audacity to reclaim something that was taken from us, which oftentimes was our voice and our right to actually speak out about what has been happening to us. And so that gives me hope in seeing young people, Black and Brown people, stand up, give voice to this, and then to see things actually begin to change. You know, but I'll be honest, you know, I'm hopefully skeptical as well. And that's because, you know, in the back of my mind is always, is it just the flavor of the day? Because we know that this takes long work, a long time. It's hard work. It takes a long time, and it's messy and it's frustrating. And on the one hand, I'm hopeful that we can press on and endure through all of that. But on the other hand, I'm concerned. There's the doubt or the skepticism on whether or not those who have the opportunity to become exhausted and go back to their way of life will do that. Whereas there are many of us who don't have the, if you want to call it a privilege, to get exhausted and, you know, go back to life as normal. It just is not our reality. I have three boys, Black boys, not my reality. So that's where it is, you know. And so I'm hopeful also that even as a part of this conversation, you know, I feel like I started earlier, you know, I didn't study design. I didn't go to school for design, but it can feel very esoteric, right? And, you know, I love that I had the opportunity to meet Leslie Ann, and you know, it's nice when you begin to see diverse faces and diverse experience in this, because I think that they need to be a part of the conversation. And so just in general, as I move more in the space and encounter individuals who are women and people of color working in this space, it gives me hope that their voices and their experiences will help to inform and shape the design of social sector programs that often have a very even disproportionate impact on their lives or the lives of the people who are closest to them.
Thank you. I want to go deeper a little bit about this piece around like, what are we losing, and what is access looking like, and how are we reframing what it is that we're holding on to as far as the guideposts of what kind of intentional design and purposeful creative approaches to our work is. And so I think one of the guideposts that's really beautiful is something that Leslie has created in this new language, in a lot of ways, of saying, hey, some words haven't worked for us in the past, so let's use a more expansive word like plurality. Or also, what are the critical tools and language? What's the definition of certain words that we're using now? And so Leslie's created, it's a designer's critical alphabet. So I'm curious if you'll talk a little bit more about that and how it's being used, Leslie.
Okay, so I'm still trying to figure out how it's being used, but I created this critical alphabet because, so I'm an industrial designer, and we were taught to make beautiful things. We weren't, in the design education I had, wasn't even like design education today, where there's so much social justice or design for social impact in it. It really was about doing things that were beautiful. And so I have found over the years that sometimes I've wanted language to support things that I wanted to say in conversations, you know, particularly as a Black woman from another country. So I come into any conversation here in America, you know, I come in already with all of these levels of otherness. You know, sometimes I need to be able to express or to be able to call out or find a definition for something that I'm seeing or experiencing. And so I started having, I started to walk around with this little notebook where I would see a situation happening and I'm like, oh, there's a little bit of xenophobia in that, you know, and I'll kind of put an X and write that down. Or I would see that everyone had adopted the same kind of position immediately. And I'm like, okay, that is groupthink. And then I'd write it down. And so I started making all of these notes. And we designers like things like flashcards and stuff like that. And I started to see the alphabet emerging. And then I said, okay, let me start to put this stuff in. And flesh it out. So actually, there are a few letters in the alphabet that are real force fit because I could not find a word to fit. So if anyone can find a better K, because I have kleptocracy, I am open. Send me a message and tell me what's a better word for K. And there are one or two that I really just put in because I was trying to fill it. But there's also an alternative alphabet where, like I said, there's a list. So those are the ones that got into the deck, but I have like a whole second alphabet, like I have bias, but then I have, oh my goodness, that one was a bad example. But you know, like I have other terms that I thought people needed to know, right? So how are people using it, or how was it intended for people to use? It's just to remind you that, oh, there's another perspective. There are many ways of looking at a problem. Even the start of the alphabet kind of starts within my own stereotype, where I had a stereotype of the person working in Silicon Valley. And I'm like, okay, so in my mind, I was thinking of the stereotype of like four people, four what we call tech bros, sitting down together and designing something. And I'm like, what do these tech bros need to know, right? But that's also me coming in with my own biases. And so it was like me saying, well, okay, what would I want to tell these people? Maybe you need to know a little bit more about these concepts as you are designing, so that so an alternative A that I actually have is ableism and ageism. They didn't make the final alphabet, but the aim is to get people to start thinking about things designed through a more critical lens, and people will find that they may find my terms are inadequate, but at least they will also start to think of other ways of framing design problems. I think you asked two questions, and I'm not sure if I answered the second one.
We'll get to it later. I do want mm-hmm. you to talk about plurality and some of the new words that you're using, but this is a perfect place to see what questions this has brought up for everyone on the call. And we want to take about 10-15 minutes, and give everyone space to chat questions to our speakers. And so please, I invite you to share some questions in the chat. And Heather, I'm gonna hand the screen over to you for our questions discussion.
Yes, yes, yes. We have a question. Can someone guide me to equity and design in healthcare and working in youth spaces? If either of our speakers could talk about that or put that in the chat, that would be great. I have some resources I can share in the follow-up email. From a recent webinar, there's a lot of resources for how to empower young people to have a voice in what programs they participate in. So I can send those extra, but if you could speak to that, Leslie or Tamika or anyone that's on the call, working with healthcare or youth.
I can speak to the youth one. When I left the administration, I started this podcast called Raising Entrepreneurs. So I would interview people, experts in this idea of how do we raise kids with an entrepreneurial mindset. And I had interviewed this guy from Ashoka, and he was over, and it's gonna escape me, but they had a program where they were really engaging young people in making, in creating solutions in their communities to the problems that they see. And so I think that they came up with a number of tools and resources, both for really engaging families with empowering their young people. So, yeah, it was, somebody said maybe it was Ashoka Youth Venture, and it is associated with the Ashoka Youth Venture. There was another name for it, but I can't think of it. But I would say there is Ashoka. And then also in the DC metro area, there's another organization that I've been with, engaged with, just kind of slightly, and that is Learn Serve International. And they're another great one that uses kind of design thinking to engage young people in creating the solutions to the problems that they see in the world. And so one instance, I interviewed this young lady on my podcast. She's an adult now. I mean, I think she may even be 30 something, I don't know, or early or close to 30. But she, when she was in high school, she participated in Learn Serve International. And she is a child of a father who was incarcerated or has been incarcerated quite a bit. And so that experience of that she went through Learn Serve and learning kind of how to think creatively about solutions and designing things, she came up with this idea of this organization called Scholar Chips. So scholar and then children of incarcerated parents. I don't know where the age is, whatever. But children of incarcerated parents. She started it back then and she's been running it all these years since and has really gotten empower these young people through the work that she's done. And what I thought when I interviewed her on my podcast, what I thought was really interesting that she said is that oftentimes when we think about people in the justice system, we focus on the individual, but we don't oftentimes think about the people who've been left behind. And so that's that diverse voice and experience that like for me, from a policy perspective, I am thinking about, okay, how do we help people who've been incarcerated get jobs or create businesses? That's how my mind, based on the roles that I've played, thinks. But I wasn't thinking about, okay, but there are people who've been left behind and their lives have been impacted. So anyway, Learn, Serve, and Ashoka are two that I can think of.
So I'm gonna share like a curriculum experiment that I did during my PhD, where I ran a camp for children in Trinidad, in a really remote part of Trinidad, but I wanted to introduce them to design thinking. And then I wanted to create empowering design thinking curriculum. So I used a rights-based approach where we first talked about the rights of the child. So children were able to see, oh, I am this person with power and I deserve whatever, whatever, whatever. And actually, like, the school that I worked in was very scared. They were like, oh my goodness, you're gonna teach these kids about their rights. Are you sure you wanna do this? I'm like, yes, I want to do this. And I want these children to see that even though that they are young children, they have the right to identify problems and make change. So, you know, I'm just sharing this as an approach, if anyone is brave enough to do it. And what we did over 3 weeks with the kids is that first they focused on their own human rights, their individual rights, and then they designed something that would give them more access to the right that they were most interested in, you know? And it was really fun and sweet to see, you know, all of these kids said, oh my gosh, play is my right, because that's in the UN Declaration of Rights, that all children have the right to play. And so they design all of these things to help them play more. Then the second week, the kids had to think about their school and see where were their concerns within the school, you know, and they had to identify, okay, how were they then going to design a way of making their school better? And then the nice design there is that this was in the Caribbean, so the kids were complaining about the mango tree, which I didn't know was a problem. They're like, we hate that mango tree. I'm like, what do you mean you hate the mango tree? I'm like, the tree is too tall and the mangoes are so good and we don't have access to them. And, you know, all of these revolutionary kids. And so they all like designed these like huge scissors cutting implements and cutting implements with baskets and, you know, things like that, to, so that they could get these mangoes. And then, like, actually one child developed a policy, because I think it was against the school rules for them to climb the mango tree. And so they started to change policy. And then in the final week, we said, okay, and now you've reached a big community, go out and interview someone in the community. And let's hear these, the problems from the community. And then they interviewed people to figure out what was going on. And then they responded to those, and they designed new things. So it was interesting. Again, I'm probably taking up a lot of time with this, but the ideas are just so fantastic. One child interviewed somebody who said, my goodness, that they hated to go to church, right? And they said, you know what, we have to go to church, but we hate church. And then these children designed Skype via church, or church Skype, for this person who loved elements of church, but really didn't want to get up in the morning to go, right? Another thing that they designed is that they said, you know what, people in our village want to be able to get together and want to travel around the village, and, you know, in a party kind of way. And they designed a party bus. Well, now I've moved to New Orleans and I found out, oh, okay, party buses already exist. But, you know, that is a way of engaging children with design, you know, and letting them see, oh, we can make change. You know, we can see, can identify problems in the world. Everything isn't perfect, and then we can respond to them. And so that's the way that I like to work with design. And I'm just throwing this idea out there. If anyone wants to take it, you can take it. Send me a message and tell me what you do with it.
I'm gonna do it with my boys. I'll make them, and I'll keep you posted, Leslie.
Oh, I want to hear, definitely.
I love that. That was beautiful. I love those stories. Another question is, besides your critical alphabet, which is amazing, you do have to get it. I put the link in Etsy. The questions and provocations are just sublime. Like, everyone should wake up and think about one card a day and how it applies to their life. A question is, what other tools have either of you found that have been helpful in your equity-centered design toolkit? Like, what do you carry with you and pull out?
So I've been locked out of my office for months, but I love the Liberatory Design Toolkit that I know my friend Tanya Anaisi is one of the designers on that team, but it's a pretty big team. But for me, the Liberatory Design Toolkit, and then Creative Reaction Lab also has the equity-centered ECCD, I think, equity-centered, I'm going to mess up the name, design thinking. For me, those two resources are pretty good. Yes, thank you. Thank you, Emily. Hi, Emily.
What was that again? I'm writing it down for myself.
You said so Liberatory Design Toolkit and the Equity-Centered Community Design Toolkit.
Okay.
And both are Creative Reaction Lab Zone is available online for sale. The Liberatory Design Toolkit, I think that they're making it available for sale. I'm hoping that they'll make it available for sale. Sometimes it's like a little bit of a imaginary thing. You see it and then you don't see it. So I got a copy in one of those waves when it was available. But actually, I think it's available for download, but it's not as nice as holding it in the cards, in your hands.
Let's do maybe one or two more questions. This is fantastic. And there's a huge opportunity with all the participants to crowdsource answers to these questions as well, in addition to what Leslie and Tamika are sharing. So Heather, maybe one or two more questions?
Yeah, I don't know if Tamika got to fully respond to some of the resources that you rely on, like what you carry with you. And we will compile these resources in a follow-up email with the recording of the session. So please keep asking questions. And we'll say how you can access these kits. So I'm curious for Tamika, what do you carry with you from your work in policy, you know, working at federal level and looking at design and the frustrations that you've had? What do you carry with you now that you're at Core Strategy Partners and you're leading your work? What are some of the tools that you lean on?
You know what, I'm like, what do I carry with me? I really don't carry anything with me. Honestly, I think curiosity, you know, that's what I carry with me. And then also I have a broad network of individuals. And so I am not afraid to reach out to people because I don't think of myself as an expert at any of this stuff, right? It is learning. It is constant learning. And so, you know, I had a great call with Leslie Ann and with Heather. And, you know, so I'm always reaching out to individuals who have expertise in all these different areas to learn from them and to kind of take those nuggets. So, yeah. So thank you, Leslie Ann, for your suggestions. And I'm going to be checking those out.
Another question we had was, right now with COVID and everything going on and our distancing, how can we engage if it's virtual? What are some of the ways that we can really work with stakeholders when we are more disconnected, when before we would love to be in community and playing with those children under that mango tree? What have you seen and what do you recommend in this time?
So my workload actually did not reduce when we went into work from home mode. So I continued, I lead a public facing design thinking program at Tulane University, and we continued to have community workshops. We used Zoom like everyone else. And some of the workshops were a little more mission focused, but some of them were really just because people just wanted to connect with people. So we did a workshop. Actually, there's one person in this call who's from that workshop that we did a few weeks ago, which was just about, hey, come and chat about what strategies you are using to get through this pandemic. And then we crowdsourced or co-created this manifesto of things to do to get through this this time. So for me, really, Zoom, whiteboarding tools, I've been sharing with a lot of people in design thinking, sharing different types of warm-ups, activities that are appropriate in this kind of remote setting, activities via WhatsApp and things like that. So I'm gonna plug my employer, right? I work at the Taylor Center at Tulane University, and we're gonna do a series in the fall where we're looking at regular design thinking tools, and we're gonna run workshops around making some of these tools and methods remote. So, you know, people just have to experiment. Some things are possible. But what I found, of course, is that we do much less, or not less, we work much more slowly, and we have to pause so that we could build relationships with people. But even remotely, it's possible to build relationships.
And Tamika, do you have strategies that you've been using to engage during this time?
Yeah, you know, it's hard. I mean, honestly, I'm trying all kind of, you know, Zoom but gosh, I do miss, honestly, just being able to meet with people and to convene in person, because this forum that we're on now, we're doing it so much. And while it's great to see people's faces, that energy that you get with people in person, sometimes you can't really capture it the same way. So, you know, I'm just, you know, I'm doing what everyone else is doing, but it does not, you know, meet all the needs. I created something here in our community called the Montgomery County Children's Business Fair, and it's been this one day marketplace where kids between the ages of 6 and 15, they create products and sell and all of that, right? Well, I usually have it in this month, September. And now that this has happened, we're not able to do this. And so it's funny because I have been thinking, like, how could I do something in an online way that engages and brings young people together, encourages them to think creatively and things of that sort. But then I also hear from parents how exhausted they are with online, right? So I'm trying to think, oh my goodness. So I don't have the solution. I don't know. Maybe somebody else has another idea that maybe we could try out here to still meet our objective of trying to get kids to really think about a problem, attack it creatively, in a way where it doesn't all have to be online. I don't know.
I don't know.
I'm just going to pepper this conversation with a random thing. So you hold the Montgomery County Fair because your last name is Montgomery, or you live in Montgomery County? Okay. Okay, I thought you were the mayor.
No, I live in Montgomery County. And so it just so happens my last name is Montgomery as well.
That's awesome. It's interesting. There's a lot of great chatter. We'll have to see how we can provide space for this. And I think Lee can help with this. Lee, wave your hand on the video. Bringing designers together, bringing folks together about how do we share resources, how do we share toolkits, how do we share insights, and how do we collaborate with each other. So we'll come up with something, and we'll put that in the follow-up email, because I know I'm so inspired. Lee is an amazing convener. Lee Kim, who's on the call with us, is an amazing convener of designers. This is group called Design Zeal, so we're all design zealots. Coming together to share ideas and to share experiences. And we all know from creativity, right, hearing from others, it just helps grow and expand what's possible. And the inspiration's amazing. And Andy's a part of that too. Sorry, Andy, didn't mean to leave you out with Lee. I think we definitely can see what that would look like. And I can send you at minimum to them and to that amazing group, which I've been involved with and benefited from. But that's a great question.
Fantastic. We are going to move into our breakout rooms, and so we can discuss this more. And before we do that, I want to talk about a few community care items and put up my screen so you can see. One, in our breakout rooms, let's share talking space with one another so that no one person dominates the time. Our speakers will also be sent to breakout rooms as participants. And we need a facilitator who's going to guide each breakout group. So we'd like the person to facilitate who had their birthday most recently. So you'll read the prompt to the group and keep the flow going. And so the person with the birthday that happened most recently will be our facilitator. And thank you for helping us there. So the question we want you to discuss is related to design and equity. What do you want to see change? You're going to have 15 minutes to be in these rooms, and we'll give you a warning when you need to wrap up your lovely conversations. You're going to be with 3 or 4 people. And when we return, we're going to take some time to debrief and share the highlights from these conversations. So see you in 15 minutes.
Thank you for joining us. Please do join us for the next Live Possibility Project so you can take part in the breakout sessions that follow. All sessions are recorded. Please visit possibilityproject.org and connect with us on LinkedIn so we can invite you to meet more incredible impact influencers and make new connections with people who care about what you care about. This has been Possibility Project, produced in cooperation with the nonprofit Snapcast.